Hey, and welcome to the first episode of the Daily Bugle presented by Across the Bifrost. My name's Sung Soo, and you probably have no idea what this is. And that's okay. I really don't know what it is either. But ideally, it's going to be a monthly podcast recapping the news and happenings of Marvel Crisis Protocol. So this episode is launching on November 1st. I'm joined in a few moments by my friends Jay Larson and Mark Garreau. Mark and I are going to talk about all the different releases put out. There's been a whole lot of news covering the month of October. Jay and I are going to be talking about what's going live in November. But first, Mark, how you doing, sir?
Good. Thank you for having me on. It's been a while since we've been on a pod together. Long time no see.
Yeah, well, it has been a long time since we've seen each other. But yeah, I think the last podcast we did, for whatever reason, didn't get out there, but that's okay. So again, recapping all the news, the goal of this podcast, to be clear, is a short form. Mark does some wonderful work in Across the Bifrost called First Impressions, and this is kind of just being a conglomerate of that. We want to get you headlines. There's so much content out there. We're not going to go super deep into these. So there's been a ton of different character updates. And Mark, what do you think of the character updates as a whole?
So across the board, these have been slam dunks, I think. The only one that...
Nothing. Keep going.
Oh, across the board, across the Bifrost. Good one. What's it called? The only one that I have found to be questionable is Hulk, who we'll get into in good time anyways. But every single one of these, they've either been nerfing an overplayed meta staple, or they've been buffing an unloved fan favorite into what I think is a reasonable range. So I think they're almost 100 for 100 on these, with Hulk being the only question mark for me.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of complaining about it. I have seen a lot of armchair development, but I think that's going to come around anytime you start rebalancing characters. We've experienced that in past games together. So let's just jump right into it. Let's start with Green Goblin, leader of the Spider Foes. Green Goblin got some nice quality of life things, right? We increased his attack dice by 1 from 4 to 5, which is obviously huge. And he got a whole new leadership that really doesn't require power anymore, but we can only use it once per turn. Mark, what do we think of Green Goblin?
Yeah, so real quick, one detail that might escape people. His builder is actually 6 dice on his injured side, which means that he hits like an absolute truck if you flip him. Personally, I was in the camp that Green Goblin didn't necessarily need a buff in his current state. Like, his kit in a vacuum is good enough to be played in like 5 to 10% of games. But that's not where you want a fan favorite like the Green Goblin to be. So I think they're buffing him up into a place where you want to play him every game, and you don't feel bad playing him in Spider Foes, which I think is a very good place for him to be.
Yeah,
he's
I think the other thing...
generate power to do all of his cool stuff. His leadership now actually feels a lot more impactful. Just win across the board.
Yeah, I think the other thing to keep in mind is Green Goblin was often compared to some unaffiliated fours, and that kind of scope, the temperature in that room has definitely changed a little bit there. So next up is the deadly duo, Rocket and Groot. Rocket got some nice quality of life changes. Mainly, Groot doesn't kill him anymore if he's thrown into him, right? Rocket is allowed to pass off attacks to Groot at range 2 now, and then Rocket is immune to all collisions, which is a lot, but hey, that's okay. He's a squirrely raccoon. Groot, receiver of the most unjust nerf ever, can only heal himself once per round. His attack, however, was buffed out to range 3, which is really, really nice. What do we think of the deadly duo?
So, Rocket, great. I think it's hilarious that he's almost a hard counter to Magneto now, because if Magneto attacks Rocket, he shunts it onto Groot. If Magneto tries to throw anything at Rocket, he doesn't care. And he's doing an attack type that Magneto doesn't like. But Groot is by far the more interesting one to me. It's a little bit sad that he no longer functionally has healing factor 6 on his card, but the bodyguard extra range, those extra 2 inches between range 1 and range 2 is actually, I'm betting people are going to find, surprisingly impactful for positioning the two of them in games, just from early games I've seen on the Discord so far. And the fact that his builder is range 3 just means that he and Rocket are going to have less problems being scenario relevant and helping, which is just going to make them way more desirable. And I think it was a slam dunk.
Yeah, you hit on it. I think my favorite thing is you get to play with both Rocket and Groot at the same time now. Previously, it's like Groot was hanging back to babysit Rocket, right? Or Rocket was kind of flapping in the breeze because Groot went up to do things. And I do like that they both feel really engaged. I also think it's worth exploring We Are Groot again, which is a really powerful card, kind of a maligned card. But they have some really good tactics cards between the two of them. I really like them as a little five-point package. Let's keep going through the rest of the Guardians then. Gamora got a lot of changes, most notably her stamina increased and stealth. Did I miss anything else there, Mark?
No, I believe that's it. She was always a bit of a glass cannon when she came out. She was like, okay, but not that great, which felt okay at the time because a lot of fours weren't that great early on around the time when she came out. But as we started seeing more like serious heavy hitters in the four slot, like Vision, Enchantress, Medusa, Venom, well, Venom was already out. He outclassed her, but he was like the only one that very clearly did at the time. So she kind of just like fell off the radar. And I think making her a little bit tankier and giving her stealth, which means that she doesn't die as easily on the approach, is going to do a lot of work. She has a passive that essentially doubles wilds with a six dice builder. So if she can get in there and do work, she's going to be as great as always. And especially with the Guardians changes that we're going to talk about more with Star-Lord, I think she's an excellent piece.
Yeah, Mark, and I think one of the things that we're both aware of, Gamora does great work if she gets there, right? The issue was just always, does she get there or does she explode? But if you haven't played Gamora, her damage output can be surprising.
Yeah, especially with that spender. If you can get enough to actually hit somebody with the spender, those double attacks can be absolutely lethal.
All right, and we're kind of talking around it, but let's talk about Mr. Peter Quill, the Star-Lord himself. Not that much changed on him, right? He just kind of got a new leadership. They just kind of worked around Wing it a little bit, right?
He also got hit and run, which is actually incredibly really, really important. That's a great point. To his play pattern.
So let's talk about his play pattern first, and then let's dive into Wing It, because Wing It is actually a long conversation. So hit and run obviously lets him make an attack action followed by a move. Both of his attacks are range 4 energy attacks. What do you think this allows him to do?
I think this makes him an excellent character for Bs and Ds and any of those kind of slow, plinking, secure shape plays. Because you can stand on one of those home points, move up, hit and run backwards off of your builder. Now, that requires you to do a damage around on average with Peter Quill to be able to keep that up. But if you take the power gem, all of a sudden you don't need to as much. You'll be doing move, hit and run a builder back, alternating with move, hit and run a spender back, if I recall correctly on the math, which is a neat little combo. That said, I don't think you should be playing Power Gem Star-Lord, which we'll be getting more into in the gem section. But I think just that play pattern in general makes him actually functional. Because, like, range 4 small base isn't quite enough to be able to stand on points and have good coverage a lot of the time. So hit and run lets him move off the point to actually reach somebody and then come back, which is hugely helpful.
All right. And as impactful as that is for Star-Lord, and by I also agree, you shouldn't play him with the Power Gem. I think winging it is honestly the bigger change. So previously you had to discard a tactics card at the start of the round, and then a singular character got 3 wing it tokens. Now, during the power phase, you choose up to 3 allied characters, give each one of them a singular wing it token. The wing it token has the same effect, which is you may reroll 2 dice when you're attacking, defending, or dodging. This obviously feels like a huge change to me in most situations, Mark. How do you feel about it?
I love everything about it. I remember all the debates in the early days about whether the Guardians of the Galaxy leadership was playable or not, which, I mean, you're already in a bad spot when you're asking whether the leadership is actually worth using. And especially when you compare it to so many amazing leaderships out there, it was just trash. A tactics card for 6 rerolled dice is absurd and borderline offensive. A way to think about this is, let's say you're playing 6 wide X-Force. That gives you 6 attack rerolls, right? You didn't have to spend a tactics card there. you just got it for free. And X-Force is not considered that good of an affiliation right now for a variety of reasons that aren't necessarily tied to the leadership. But that's just to point out that the effect that you were discarding a tactics card for wasn't even that good if it was free. In the way that it was packaged, like it's good, but it's not like Brotherhood leadership. It's not Dormammu leadership. It's not Cap's leadership, either of them. And so I think making it free, making it so you can split it amongst your team, is just a huge boon for Star-Lord in general. And I think it makes them generically way more playable.
Yeah, I really like the duality of the leadership, right? You are able to play Guardians in a wide team. You're also able to play them with a chunkier team, right? Because the value of the leadership goes up if it's on a higher threat character. The fact that you can use them for offensive or defense or even dodging, I just really like the modality of them now. I'm a huge fan of the new Wing It. And Mark, we've talked about it. I haven't been getting a lot of games lately for a number of reasons, but I would like to test new Star-Lord on the table a little bit more than I have already.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. And something else to think about, like you just mentioned it, you can go kind of tall with this. There's essentially no effects in the game that let you apply reroll up to 2 attack dice. There's some that are reroll any, right? And some that are reroll 1, but there's nothing quite in that bracket. And I think that it's a surprisingly large boon to characters that are trying to fish for wild triggers, for example. Or you just really need to reliably do something. Like, I've heard a lot of people mentioning Thor with the the Guardians leadership, because he really wants that wild on his builder. If he's doing a 4 Asgard, he really wants to push through 1 damage to get the stagger. I think there's a lot of characters out there that are really reliant on being able to push damage to get power to do stuff. And I think this is a really nice boost for those kinds of characters fitting in.
Absolutely. So some less impactful characters. Iron Man had a change. Friday AI went down in power. Did anything else happen on Tony Stark?
Not to the best of my knowledge. I do want to point out that this Friday AI change is very big because it's not a once per turn ability, which means you can chain builder after builder after builder after builder with Friday AI constantly on. And if you're able to get that chain going, you've got a 3 threat that's pushing out 6 dice attacks from range 4, which is a lot of damage from a lot of range on a very tanky model. So I think he's very much a model to watch out for. If you're playing any kind of Avengers, I think he's a slam dunk. Both of the Caps like him. I think he's actually a really funny 3 threat in Dormammu teams because Helios Laser Bombardment, the tactics card that's coming out with another model we're going to be talking about in a second, essentially lets you pull power off of your whole team, which fixes Dormammu's weakness of applying to damage if you run too hot on your characters. Digressions aside, I think Iron Man's a really interesting and compelling 3 threat that might even be splashable now.
Yeah, and for those young lions who weren't playing when the starter box was out there, Iron Man is very durable. Mark, you mentioned that. Like, get him out there. He's a solid 3 that you can stick out there, and he doesn't just explode when you look at him. Another classic model getting a rework is Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. A couple things happened here, right? Binary form went down in power, and Danvers' special changed to be size 4, which does allow her to throw the embiggened Kamala Khan. But what do we think about Captain Marvel?
One quick note, she did also get immunity to incinerate, which is a nice little tweak. Binary forms change is huge. It means that you can, if you can set her up with her builder, she can binary form every round with Steve or any way that you can reliably get 1 power to her around, which is a very powerful and consistent play pattern. But I do want to spend some time talking about the Danvers special because I think this hasn't been talked about enough. It's literally She-Hulk's throw. So you can throw terrain or characters within range 2 up to size 4, medium. I think that is incredible. Sure, it costs a lot of power, and especially with the binary form that you really want to be trying to be in, it can be a bit of a tough sell. But if you can find her a home in a very power-rich environment, like Brotherhood, like Dormammu, like A-Force, where she's affiliated, I think she's going to be a real menace on the table now.
Yeah, and she honestly has one of my favorite attacks, right? Anytime you can reroll all attack dice, I'm a big fan of it, especially when you tack it onto a builder like that. Which is a big and important distinction. Another OG character is Ultron, and if you like six dice builders, well, he's got one of those. They upped his strike from 4 dice to 6 dice, and they completely redid, I can't remember the name of it. Analyze and Annihilate. And now, before resolving crit effects, this character may reroll 1 die in its attack roll for each, I believe, crit in the opposing defense roll. So, huge quality of life changes. Strike, again, 6 dice strike, we just talked about that on Gamora. What do we think of Ultron?
Also, real quick before we proceed, the energy blast also gained Wild Incinerate, which is very nice because I think he's going to be doing that attack a lot. And Analyze and Annihilate is a really unique ability. So one of the weird things that people might not have realized about this is that this happens before crit results, which means I do my initial roll as the attacker, the defender rolls their initial roll, and then with the way this is worded, you re-roll the dice before exploding the crits and continuing on to the normal modified dice step, which means you can re-roll into more crits to explode more dice, which is absolutely crazy. But it also has like the downside of you're not able to re-roll the dice that you would have exploded from crits you already had. So I'm not necessarily saying it's stronger than a normal re-roll effect, but the timing implications on it are very wild, to say the least.
I do think with the timing effect, it is hands down more effective than the traditional reroll, right? Just because you get the chance at the additional crit where you don't receive that value later on. We can go into some nerdy dice math later. We're trying to go through these pretty quick. Next up is Ghost Rider. You did a wonderful write-up for Ghost Rider Across the Bifrost, the first impression. Ghost Rider rework. Wow, that's quite the slug you've got there. Basically, he's got one more stamina on each side. He picked up Immunity, Bleed, Hex, Incinerate, and Poison. And Spirit of Vengeance no longer has a range requirement, but it requires damage.
It has a damage.
What do we think of Ghost Rider?
I am blown away by Ghost Rider. So Ghost Rider in his current form, I've actually seen him win games in this current season. So he's not like complete trash, but he is a bit lacking in what you need from a Vive. I think right now people are essentially only playing them if they really need him for particular threat coverage for Midnight Suns, or if they are a huge Ghost Rider fan. Those are like the only two reasons to be playing Ghost Rider right now. And I think with these changes, he is a slam dunk in Midnight Suns. I'm a little bit less convinced about his home in Defenders, just because he's not as good as at portal abusing as MODOK is, who would be competing for the same slot, and is the main thing for Defenders right now. But I could also see him getting splashed in places like Avengers, where you can... either Steve or Sam, he would fit in great. Because, like, one power cost on Wicked's Judgment whenever your opponent does it is a neat little buff. Or you can also just play into the punishing for playing attrition that's built into Ghost Rider with a Sam spam roster. With Ghost Rider in is, like, the higher threat option that just makes you even more of a porcupine for your opponent. I think he's going to be interesting to splash. He's going to be really compelling where he's affiliated, and I'm just excited to see that sculpt on the table more.
Sure, and what a great segue that is. I think hands down the most popular Captain America lately has been Sam, but Steve Rogers received a change as well. Real quickly, I'm going to go through these. His strike now pushes models one size larger. Who cares? Shield throw becomes a flat power generator, which is amazing. In addition, it picks up an additional attack die on it. Shield slam allows you to slam models one size larger as well. Okay, that's kind of nice. But the big one is shield throw, range 4, 5 dice, flat power builder, and you can ricochet for a second point of power. Huge quality of life changes for Steve. Happy to see Steve get some love and have been really enjoying him on the tabletop.
Yeah, so for people who haven't played pre-rework Steve, he essentially has this problem where he has to stay within range 2 of somebody because, like, the biggest draw on his card outside of his leadership is his bodyguard, right? And if you're doing that, then you're like allocating a lot of resources to the same place. And there's a lot of the time where he won't be in strike range of whatever his ally is trying to deal with, because they might be a range 3 fighter, which meant that he was every round either like double moving or move shield throwing. And shield throw, when it was 4 dice and didn't generate power, was awful. Just awful. Whereas this one, you're going to actually damage people, you're going to actually get the ricochet, and on top of that, now Steve is going to have a lot more power on him to spend on bodyguards and vibranium shields. And I think it just brings his whole kit together in a way that Korbok Steve just wasn't quite working right.
All right, so the next few characters, you know, kind of got the Groot treatment here. We'll start with Shuri. Shuri's biggest change is she can no longer push any model. She's only pushing model size 3 or less.
Yeah, so they also fixed the timing on her rerolls to essentially be what they were before that ruling that completely upended everything. Yeah. So now you pay for the rerolls during the modified dice step instead of before the attack, which is essentially bringing things back to the way they were 6 months ago. And everyone with those reroll effects that we've seen so far have that change. So it seems to be just consistently going back that way. The size limitation isn't that big of a deal. There aren't a ton of size 4 characters in the game. Like, it's nice for, like, Dormammu and Hulkbuster and some of those, like, really beefy characters. Hell, it's a buff to Black Dwarf. I mean, one of my biggest complaints about Black Dwarf in the early days of the game was, what happens if your opponent plays Shuri? Because her attacks literally stagger him, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, so, you know I love some Black Dwarf. So, again, Shuri, still a good model, still worth taking. I think an important thing to get out here, Mark, and I wonder if you agree with me here. I believe that all of the characters we're going to talk about that were negatively readjusted are still very playable characters. But I think they're going to go through...
You're almost not going to notice the difference on Shuri. If anything, I think she got a net buff because of the reroll fix. That said, I think Shuri has not been a meta staple for a while now. Probably about like 3 to 4 months, like at the very least since the end of the last season of TTS, because people are playing on C a lot. And they're just playing on like secure shapes that she doesn't want to be on. And I think also people are starting to see the limitation of Wakanda because they only have 5 characters. And it just it makes things very finicky for them. In terms of roster building. So I think Shuri's stock has gone down both as a splash and Wakanda as a whole. So I think the nerf is it's closer to a buff, and I think that's perfectly fine. And I think she's in a perfectly fine place.
And I think with all these characters we're going to talk about here, Mark, I would anticipate them almost disappearing from the meta for 3 to 6 months. And then I would expect to see them start popping back up again. So let's talk about Valkyrie. Valkyrie had a pretty big change next. Pat and I just recorded about this on Across the Bifrost, which you can find at AcrossTheBifrost.com. The biggest change for Valkyrie is her throw now costs 3. In addition, she needs some additional symbols to trigger her flurry, right?
Yeah, so now it is crit wild instead of just wild, which is a subtle but meaningful alteration of the flurry odds on that spender.
Yeah, but not being able to double move throw every round is huge. Right? She was kind of the default go-to control piece who was also able to just blast people when she got saturated with power. And now both of those things have definitely been reined in. I think this is needed. I think this will be healthy for the meta. I'm excited to see what other threes pop up. We talked about a couple of spicy ones before that have been rebalanced. And of course, there's all sorts of new threes continuing to come out. Is there anything else about Valkyrie?
No, I think Valkyrie is getting a much needed love tap downwards. I don't think she's definitely, even before the rework, lost her title of like the best three threat right now. I feel like Iron Fist has to have just like head and shoulders, like ended the conversation. But she's definitely like in contention for like the top 5, top 10, and there's something like 50 threes at this point. So I think it's more than fine to bring her down, and this is a reasonable amount.
Yeah, I think for me, Valkyrie was hands down the best control three threat. And yeah, I agree with your general sentiments there. Next up, Medusa. Let me ask you here, Mark, how many times have you used the split ends attack?
Oh, the spender. So I think the first few times I ran Medusa, I tried and I was like, wow, this is so much worse than the builder. And then I just never did it again.
And hey, I think that's really what they were adjusting here. So Braid Bash was a very confusing attack. It had a couple of different rules, clarifications built about it. But basically, you could stack the pushes or the flurries. Those have kind of gone away. Right now, there's very clear timing as to which one happens to first. And in addition, the push is harder to trigger and the flurry is harder to trigger. So really no way to spin this otherwise than Medusa.
So the first thing, the push is not actually necessarily harder to do. Because the push no longer requires damage. It just requires a wild.
That's true. So you could treat it as a lateral, whether it's actually... Yeah, that's true. Me saying it's harder to do is different. Its triggering capabilities have just been changed, right? Or threshold has been changed.
And I think this is actually a really interesting change to her, which might not necessarily... Well, it's probably going to be a nerf, but not as hard as people think. Because I think what this change is going to do is essentially it's going to make the damage just like melt the world all you've got version of Medusa not really work as well anymore. But I think it makes her a very consistent control character because I mean, like, it depends on the defensive stats of the character, but pushing through a damage can often be harder than just getting the wild on five dice, reroll one. And just even having an attack that it reliably pushes size 3 or less, and maybe you get the flurry, I think is a pretty solid place to be in as a 4th threat. And Royal Decree is already an insanely good superpower, and she has a great character throw stapled on too. So I think this is going to hit her win rate. I think this is going to hit her play rate a lot, but I think that that's going to be less about her being bad and more about people being sick of seeing her on the table. But I think she's going to slowly make a comeback as people realize she's still pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think she's a better control piece. Getting those double stack pushes was just huge. She might be a more consistent piece, but I think her ceiling's definitely lower. But
her average case is going to be consistent.
Yeah, if you can live with a single push on people, then I think she's going to be a great character, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that she's still a really, really good character, right? There's a ton of text on her card, relevant text. She's still really good. Again, like Mark said, I think she'll kind of go away. I think she'll come back in 3 to 6 months with her hair on fire. So Enchantress is up next. A lot of things happened on Enchantress. The biggest things is Bow is now once per turn. That's fine. And the other one is the Kiss of Amora, where she steals something from you. That is an action. What do we think of Enchantress?
Man, they really took a hatchet to her round one play, and I am so here for it. So the most obnoxious things that Enchantress could do is double move onto a point, bow somebody off, which is essentially what Valkyrie was doing, right? Mm-hmm. She can still do that, which is fine in my book. But the other lines that are more problematic are double move, steal an extract off of somebody with advanced R&D, or with A-Force leadership, as I've seen A-Force players do a lot. You could, like, abuse hammers that way or any kind of midline extract. Can't do that on round one anymore because you don't actually have the actions to get there. You would need some kind of movement tool on her, which is another hoop, which means most people won't try for it. The third line, which was really obnoxious, and this is essentially the reason I didn't play Criminal Syndicate in Season 6, is she can walk up, and no matter how many people you put on the point, she can beam them. And then bow all of them off the point. If you have two characters, she can beam both of them, bow both of them off the point, and then you're not scoring the point, which can just completely screw up a lot of round ones. She can't do that anymore. And I think people are going to see more and more that her main weakness is she just dies trivially easily from like round two on. As soon as you have the power to bypass her defenses, she just crumbles. And now that her round one isn't so like ludicrously absurd, it's just going to be huge. She'll still be able to do the All You Got beam spam, but now she can't chain bow people into the perfect beam. She can only get one person, so she's going to be walking a lot more to line up the perfect shot.
Yeah, to be clear, I think these are well-earned from Enchantress. Oh, yeah. I do agree that she got hit with the stick pretty hard here. She was just too self-contained and efficient before, and that was the main complaint I had about MODOK. We've talked ad nauseum about MODOK back in the day. MODOK had some changes as well. Basically, almost all the bow effects we've seen from Mr. Sinister on have kind of had this change on them, which is now once per round. And then what else happened on MODOK?
So there's the bow once per turn, and then I believe the other one... is just P-Brain MODOK's genius is infinite, his reroll ability. It went back to the quote-unquote correct timing, just like Shuri's. But this is also now just once per turn, which is a hugely impactful element of his defensive tools. Is part of the reason why it was so hard to kill him is because he would reroll essentially all of his defense dice. And then if you push damage through anyways, it would just give him power to do the rerolls again on the next attack. And so he would just have, like, absurdly high defenses in conjunction with his ability to blank wilds on the attack. I think this is a very deserved nerf. He's kind of fallen out of the meta, but he's still, like, pound for pound one of the, like, nastiest fighters in the game. And I don't think that's going to change. I think the game changed around him in the sense that his lack of mobility actually turned into a massive liability, especially considering how susceptible to control he is. But he's still going to be in a place where if you want to play him and you're willing to play around him and compensate for his mobility issues, he'll still be a compelling choice, but he's not the meta-defining monster he was.
All right, next up is Hulk, Bruce Banner. So many things have changed on Hulk, Mark. Where do you want to start here?
Oh, man. Brucey boy, he has gotten a complete makeover. So his builder went up to 7 dice. It generates power now. Didn't his throw get cheaper, or am I going crazy? Regardless of whether it got cheaper. Okay. I thought that one used to cost 3, but no, it just costs 2 now, nope. Which it did back then. And then the big headline, he gained a superpower, Hulk Not Puny Banner, which is you spend 3 when you're defending against a physical or energy attack, and you can reroll any number of dice, including skulls, which makes this Hulk insanely tanky. Like, I can't think of a single character in the game that can actually reliably burn him down in one go, even with all you've got. Like, maybe Scarlet Witch? She's the only one that comes close.
Yeah, and an important thing to note here, Mark, that we kind of blipped over, his defenses went up significantly, right? He went to 4 physical defense from 2. He went from 3. He went to 3 energy defense from 2. So we couple that compared with Hulk Not Puny Banner. His durability, I'll say, more than doubled.
Oh, yeah, way more than doubled. And to be fair, they did nerf part of his kit in compensation for all this stuff with You Won't Like Me When I'm Angry, which was the you get a bonus die for every damage you have. It went from every 3 damage to every 4 damage, so you're getting less damage out of the passive. This Hulk, he is the only one where I'm like, this might have been a huge mistake and he might be too much. Because, so Hulk's main problem beforehand was his strike did not generate power, which meant if you ignored him, you were totally fine. And like, if push came to shove, you could kill him because he only had 2 physical and energy defense and no defensive tools. And now they've literally doubled his physical defense, almost doubled his energy defense, and added a reroll any effect into the mix. And you can't ignore him because since his strike generates power, he's going to be doing stuff even if you don't hit him. I think he is going to be an absolute monster. He's going to shove into people's faces. He's never going to leave. If you try and send away, he'll hop back in. He'll do some throws. He'll beat the ever-loving bejesus out of you. It's going to be pain and suffering for someone.
Yeah, and one thing, Mark, you alluded to it, but we didn't mention, he also got immunity stun, which is huge, right?
Yes.
Stunning him previously was just so detrimental. And I agree wholeheartedly, right? He struggled with power. Really, really struggled with power. That's basically, in my opinion, fixed now. And he used to just explode, right? Like, rapid strike characters are actually shockingly strong into him. If you activated Hulk early, there was a legitimate chance he wouldn't be around by the end of the round. And now I just don't feel like that's a true statement anymore. I don't mind him losing the additional dice because he did pick up a die on his strike. And honestly, I would trade the additional die that he's losing from 3 to 4 dice for all these additional buffs he has. I think Hulk is also going to be a menace, but I'm honestly fine with a 6-threat character being an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they might have gone a bit too far, but I don't think it's massively too far out of the realm. But only time will tell.
And time will tell. And that is all the character updates, which is just an insane amount of character updates. There are some other things we want to hit on real quickly. There's been a lot of crisis update changes. Mark, I'm going to recap what I remember from the top of my head, and please correct me if I'm missing anything. So the first big change they announced, and this was via transmission, was you no longer burn one, pick out of two. You're just going to randomize the crisis you pick. They've also changed who gets to pick what based on priority now, right, Mark?
Yes. So rather than the winner of the priority roll-off picking the threat value, the loser of the priority roll-off selects threat value, which in conjunction with the fully random crisis selection massively swings the pregame power, in my view, to the player who loses the priority roll-off. Because now, since you're only essentially picking what type of crisis you're selecting, rather than having a relatively reliably chance of getting the exact crisis you want for them, the player winning prio not nearly as powerful, and on top of that, they're losing the threat selection, which admittedly I think is necessary, because being able to select a crisis at an exact threat and go first is essentially at the heart of every messed up extract play in the game, right? So, like, panic grips, city as evacuation efforts continue. If you're not playing in 19, a lot of those teams don't work as well. Like Black Order, for example. And then same with the deadly legacy virus setups. A lot of them rely on having 19 threat to have all the pieces to do the really broken stuff. So being able to take threat selection out of your opponent's hands, I think is very valuable for breaking that up, but it is going to make it so the person who loses roll off has a lot more power in the game. So I'm expecting control to come into full swing once these changes go live.
And again, the whole purpose of this podcast, I know we've been talking almost 40 minutes now, is to be a quick hitter here. We're not going to be this long every month because there's normally, aren't going to be this amount of stuff coming on. The crisis updates is worthy of a full podcast episode. A bunch of people have done podcast episodes on them. I'm sure we'll do ones in the future here. There's a lot that changes in the way that you plan your rosters. And in addition to that, there has been some roster changes as well. We've gone to 10 tactics cards over 8. Huge. It's just good. Nothing else we need to say about that. Alter egos have changed and gem selections have changed. Which one of those do you want to hit on first, Mark?
Okay, so let's do alter ego changes first. So previously, you could only have one of any given alter ego in your roster. That is no longer true. Now you can have them in your roster, but you can only have one of them on your team. This primarily is a huge buff for Web Warriors, because now they can take Core Box Peter Parker and Amazing Spider-Man in your roster at the same time, which I think is huge. Because Core Box Peter Parker, while I think he's been very maligned, has kind of had a second renaissance that was stifled by the coming of Amazing Spider-Man, where people were realizing that he's a pretty solid, low-resource control piece for a flank. Just hold it secure, pull somebody else off of secures, just do general harassment and not die. He's incredibly good at it. Whereas Amazing Spider-Man is more of an extract thief, more of a tank, and can hit a lot harder when he needs to. And so I think Web Warriors having the option to choose between those two, rather than being locked in at roster creation, which one they'll have access to, is a huge boon. Less important for the Doctor Stranges. I think it'll be neat with Iron Man and Hulkbuster.
I think it's big for Black Widow too, to be honest. And it just kind of future-proofs things, right? Like, we have no idea where they're going, but it's just a nice quality of life change in the future that we're not invalidating models if a new one comes out that's just better. We have some optionality there. So what about gems change here, Mark?
Okay, so gems no longer take up a slot in roster construction, but you must lock in who is using what gems at roster creation, not at team creation. So instead of having Corvus and the reality gem taking up two separate slots in your roster, Corvus holding the reality gem would just be the one slot in your roster.
So I'd no longer have the option of taking Corvus without the gem then, if I understand you correct, Mark.
Yeah, you would have to lock yourself into either having the gem or not having the gem. And I think this is a big nerf for Black Order, which, quite frankly, I think they deserve. They've got this really obnoxious combination of being really good when you put the time into it and just causing negative play experiences, because I don't want to say they're like full-on gacha mode, but they can sucker punch people really hard if they don't know what's coming. And I think a lot of people have been annoyed by that. And so I'm kind of glad to see them get toned down a bit.
Yeah. Is there anyone else outside of Black Order that you think really gets hit by this? Like, what do you think about Defender Strange?
Well, he's already almost stapled to the Soul Gem, so I don't think that's a big deal. The more interesting case is Midnight Suns. Because, so Midnight Suns really likes playing Demons Downtown. But they also, like, since they're an aggro team, they want to go less wide than their opponent. And the only way that they can do that at 19 threat with Blade, Dr. Voodoo, Strange with the Soul Gem, and Ghost Rider, that's the only four wide team with all affiliated characters you can play at 19. And do you necessarily want to put the Soul Gem on Strange in that case? When you have to play him like that every single game? Because I've seen a lot of Midnight Suns games where they just play Strange without the gem. So I think that's going to be a really painful conundrum for Midnight Suns players.
But it does open up that extra roster slot, so maybe they can slot someone else in there. Again, this is a deep change. It's going to have long-lasting repercussions in the rosters. Yeah. And again, we're just trying to hit things kind of at a high level and kind of move on from them quickly. So another thing coming out is we have some new models announced. We don't have release dates for them, but these are models that we now know are coming. Mark, do you have the list off the top of your head?
Yep. So I believe all the ones shown at Mini Stravaganza, we have actual cards for Miss Marvel, Hulkbuster, Rogue, and Magic. And then the three that we saw sculpts of but did not see cards of were Gambit, who's paired with Rogue, of course, Colossus, who's paired with Magic, and Juggernaut.
So obviously these are models we're very excited about. These are coming somewhere down the pipe. And this honestly concludes our initial recap. Ooh, there's a mouthful, Mark. I don't think we're going to be this long next month, but we're going to be back in the 1st of December to talk about whatever comes out in November. The reason we kind of did this is it can be confusing to keep up with the transmissions, the live streams, the Twitters, all the social media stuff. I'm an old man. I don't follow this stuff anymore, Mark. So thanks for keeping us up to date here, Mark. I really appreciated you joining me. Coming in next is going to be Jay Larson. Jay is going to have a little bit more information about distribution. What can you expect in your Christmas presents underneath your Christmas tree this year? So, Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking the time and joining us here. And hey, buddy, I'll see you back next month.
See ya.
All right. Well, joining us now is my dear friend Jay Larson from Discount Games Incorporated. If your local game store doesn't have what you need or can't find what you want, be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com. And Jay, I thought we'd have you on to talk about new releases and release schedule coming up for the month of November. Keeping up with the AMG release cycle is crazy. But first, how you doing?
I am pretty good. I just got home from San Francisco, my first time visiting there, and so that was fun. And then it's always nice to return home and get to see my cats. So life's good.
Awesome. So what's going on for AMG in the month of November, Jay? It is really hard for me to keep up with releases.
Well, first off, I guess one of the things to know about Atomic Mass or Asmodee is that, you know, there's been a lot of stuff that's released in Europe, but until yesterday, there hasn't been even any release dates for America. There have been a lot of, you know, when they previewed, for example, the Convocation, they said that Atomic Mass, that they were hoping to have it release in August or September, etc. But Asmodee never gave an actual release date. And so retailers have had guesses or stuff like that, but we've never had actual official release dates. And yesterday we got an update from Asmodee, and we finally do have some release dates. So I'm super excited that America is going to finally get to see some of the goodies that Europe has had for a little while now. And so they added some release dates to November and to December. And so for Crisis Protocol, on November 12th, we're adding on Dormammu and Blade and Moon Knight. And then in December, we're adding on the Rivals panel, Spider-Man versus Dr. Octopus, Mordo and the Ancient One, Dr. Voodoo and Hood, Dr. Strange and Clea, and the Sanctum Sanctorum Terrain Pack. And that's going to be December 10th.
Oh, that's awesome news. So we're catching up with Europe a little bit. We'll definitely have some new stuff for Christmas then.
Yeah.
Are you taking pre-orders for all that on Discount Games?
Yep. My apologies to all the people who have... I've had pre-sales up for these since we've had previews on them, and so there's some people who have been like kind of sad over the shipping delays that we've been experiencing, but I definitely appreciate anyone who puts in the pre-orders, and you know, we obviously try to get things out as quickly as possible.
All right, Jay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Again, thanks for explaining it to us. I know it's been crazy to follow this stuff up. If you are in the UK, you can always support Across the Bifrost by checking out blackgategames.co.uk. And, of course, anyone in the United States, you can check out Jay's site, discountgamesinc.com. And you can also find Jay on the Recalibration Matrix podcast. We know Black Friday is coming up. Nothing like some commercialism to celebrate America. Does Discount Games Inc. have anything coming up for that?
Currently, we're doing a few items at 35% off. I imagine that we'll probably do some others as Black Friday gets closer as well. But we currently have an item for each game system that Atomic Mass is in charge of. The one for Crisis Protocol is Hulk. I wanted to do him with the rework that we know that Hulk is getting. He's a pretty exciting character for people to add if they haven't had him yet. And then from the other game systems, we have the Infernal Squad from Legion, the HMP droid gunship for X-Wing, and the Republic Fighter Squadrons for Armada.
Awesome. Well, that's good to hear. Sounds like a great opportunity to pick up Hulk. Mark and I were just talking about Hulk. He seems really exciting. I'm glad that maligned character got a nice rework there.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Jay. Well, I want to thank you for so much for taking a few minutes of your time coming on, explaining the upcoming release schedule for us. You know, we'd love to have you back in December because, as we know with AMG, stuff's going to change, and we appreciate you staying up to date.
I feel pretty hopeful that all of these will hit their release dates by December. We will hopefully have some info about like Hulkbuster. I'm my current expectation is that he'll be in January, you know, stuff like that. So yeah.
Always the optimist, Jay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com for anything you want in the US. And again, blackgategames.co.uk for anything in the UK and the surrounding regions. Thank you so much, Jay. Have a good holiday.
All right. Thank you.
And that concludes the first episode of the Daily Bugle. Be sure to find us every month on AcrossTheBifrost.com. We'll be recapping all of the news, the latest and greatest from Atomic Mass Games, and, of course, helping you stay up to date with the release schedule, helping you plan out your wallet. So, everyone, we hope you have a happy holidays, and we'll see you next month.